I'd like to invite you to listen to the most beautiful poem about hospitality that I have ever heard. Listen carefully, would you? The Lord is my shepherd. I shall not want. He makes me lie down in green pastures. He leads me beside still waters. He restores my soul. He leads me in paths of righteousness for his name's sake. Yea, though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I will fear no evil, for thou art with me. Thy rod and thy staff, they comfort me. My guess is that you're familiar with this beautiful poem of hospitality. It is a poem about God's hospitality toward us. I want to ask you to lean very carefully and listen to the next line of this beautiful poem about God's hospitality to us. Thou preparest a table before me in the presence of my enemies. Thou anointest my head with oil. My cup overflows. In the ancient world, there were little tribes of people known as the Bedouin tribes. These were nomadic tribes of people who moved in and out, didn't really have any homes. They moved from place to place in search of grounds to hunt or grounds for agriculture. It is said that the Bedouins were some of the most incredible hosts in the world. When a person was passing by an area where the Bedouins had set up their camp, no matter who that person was, no matter how strange they might be, they would open their tents, welcome them into their tents, prepare a table before them, and protect them from their enemies. Powerful, powerful picture of hospitality. It's this picture that the psalmist is using to describe God's hospitality toward us. Over the next number of weeks, in fact, through November, our theme in worship is going to be called FaceTime. We're looking at this phrase that comes out of the technological world of computers, and we're using it as a metaphor for our face-to-face encounters with one another. God's call to us to be a people of hospitality, extending welcome and extending the benefits of community to people who do not yet belong to it. Now, I want to invite you to take that picture of the Bedouin, this tribe that opens the flap of their tent and welcomes the passerby in and protects them from their enemies. I want you to contrast that picture with our world. You're on your way to work. You're driving maybe to Lansing. And all of the nameless and faceless drivers are competing with one another for the fastest lane. Somebody zips past you because you're not going fast enough, or they're not happy with the way you're driving. They zip past you, and they let you know by hand gestures that you're number one in their life. You're walking down the street. Alma, Ithaca, St. Louis, Breckenridge. You're walking down the street one day, and there is somebody walking the other direction. As you glance up at them, you notice that their eyes are on the ground the entire time. And as you walk past, there is not even so much as a glance at one another. Or you're perhaps in a public setting, people seated together on a bench, and you notice, as I did very recently, everyone on the bench has their iPod on, and not a single person talking to each other. We're going to be talking about hospitality over the next several weeks and the challenges that we have in our culture of being a people who warmly embrace one another. The challenge is something that I want to call this morning the Dilbert Principle. And it's illustrated beautifully by this little cartoon strip that I hope that you can see up here. The Dilbert cartoon strip illustrates the lack of hospitality as well as anything I know. The first scene, Dilbert is saying to the girl, "Do you mind if I check something on my phone?" The girl with the big hair says, "Why would I mind the humiliation and disrespect of being with a man who prefers the company of his phone?" To which he responds, "That's the sort of attitude that makes you finish second to my phone." I believe that in our time, we have an extraordinary need for hospitality. In fact, I believe that one of the ways that Christians can infect the gospel, the culture in which we live, is through the practice of hospitality, the extension of welcome to people who may not be part of our community or may not be like us. I believe that maybe unlike any other time ever, We are living in a time in which hospitality is extraordinarily important and difficult, and the time is now. The problem is, we're not very good at it. Not really. The problem is that we are a mess. And this is what comes to expression in the text of Scripture that we are looking at this morning from the Gospel of Mark. Our guide through each of these Sundays, as we look at FaceTime, the practice of radical hospitality, is going to be Mark's Gospel. This morning, the Gospel of Mark finds Jesus and his disciples in a region known as Caesarea Philippi. This is a very Roman region. This isn't like the Jewish towns and villages in Galilee that Jesus and his disciples spent most of their time in. Just listen to the name of this town. Caesarea, Caesar. Philippi, a very Greek or Roman name. This is a very secular town. It is a town that's very name is a reminder that Caesar is king. And it is in this setting, this extraordinary setting, that right before the words that we just read, Jesus has just asked his disciples, "Who is it that people say that I am? And what about you? Who do you say that I am?" In this extraordinary moment in Caesarea Philippi, this very secular city, Peter has spoken on behalf of the disciples and said, "You are the Christ. You are the Son of the living God." In other words, you are the king, not Caesar. You, Jesus, are our king. And it's difficult to describe how momentous this moment is and what follows. Jesus now turns to his disciples and he says to them, "The Son of Man," a title that he used for himself on a number of occasions, "the Son of Man is going to suffer many things. He's going to be delivered over by the elders, the lay leaders of Judaism. He's going to be delivered over by the chief priests, the head of the priestly class. And he's going to be delivered over by the scribes. And he's going to be put to death. And on the third day, he's going to rise from the dead." And his disciples, still not understanding the nature of the reign of Jesus, not understanding what he was about, his disciples are thinking to themselves, no. Now's the time when Jesus is supposed to conquer our enemies, not suffer and die. And Peter is the one who gives expression to the confusion of all of the disciples. Peter, listen to this, Peter rebukes Jesus. That's what the Gospel of Mark says. Whew! Peter rebukes Jesus. And Jesus turns to Peter and speaks what very possibly may be the most harsh words in the New Testament. "Get behind me, Satan." He's looking right through Peter to the source of Peter's words. He's recognizing that the words of Peter are a temptation to he, Jesus, to avoid the suffering, the path that he needs to take. "Get behind me, Satan. You are not setting your mind on the things of God, but you're setting your mind on the things of people." And now in this extraordinary moment, Jesus now turns to the crowds who no doubt are gathering closely. Listen, everybody gathers around when they hear an argument, don't they? Nothing like a fight to draw the crowd's attentions. The crowds have perhaps drawn a little closer, and Jesus now speaks to all of the crowds and his disciples. "If anybody would come after me, that is, if anybody would follow me, if anybody would be on the adventure that I am on, if anybody would be on the journey that I am on, they must take up a cross and follow me. For whoever would save their life will lose it, but whoever loses their life for my sake and the gospel will find it." May I offer a paraphrase of what Jesus is saying to these folks? I think Jesus is saying to these people, "You are a mess. All of you, you're a mess. You are such a mess that the only hope for you is death." Wow. You're a mess. The crowds are a mess. The people in the crowds are, some of them have been marinating in a stew of hatred for the Romans. They've been oppressed and they've been misused and they have been marinating in a stew of hatred. They're a mess. Some of these folks in the crowds have been, they've been playing hide and go seek with the will of God, picking the little nitpicky things that they'll be obedient to and ignoring the great big pictures like love and justice and mercy. They're a mess. They're just a mess. And the disciples of Jesus, they're a mess. They've been following now for how many cotton picking months? And still they don't have the simplest things. They still don't understand, in spite of all of the teaching of Jesus, it is not his nature to come in and beat up all the Romans and restore the kingdom to Israel the way they want to. His way is a different way. They still don't have that through their minds. They're just a mess. And so in this extraordinary moment, Jesus says to all of the crowds, if you want to be on the adventure of following me, you must deny yourself, take up your cross, and follow me. For whoever would save his life will lose it. But whoever loses his life for my sake and the gospel will find it. I'm asking you to think about this story this morning in the context of God's call in our lives to hospitality. I know it looks like an odd fit for just a moment, but bear with me. I'm asking you to look at this passage in light of God's call to us to be a people who welcomes the stranger. God's call to us to be a people who include in the benefits of community those who don't have any good claim upon our community. Hospitality is so much more than inviting people into our homes and sharing a cup of coffee. Hospitality is a default setting in our lives, a default setting that says every man, woman, and child that I meet is created in the image of God, and I will welcome every person whom I meet as though I was welcoming God himself. Hospitality takes place in the public sphere when we just look at people in the eye and we welcome them. It takes place in the private sphere when our families, when we practice hospitality with one another, and it takes place in the midst of communities like ours when we are genuinely welcoming and hospitable people. But here's the problem. We're not very good at it. We're suffering from the Dilbert principle. We're a mess. We are a mess. Let me be more autobiographical and personal about this, if I may. I, Steve Wimmer, am convinced that you are a mess. And I'm a mess, too. I'm a mess because over the course of my life, I have had a deep longing and yearning for wholeness and happiness over the course of my whole life. And by the way, that's not why I'm a mess. That deep longing and yearning for wholeness and happiness is a part of being human. It is just what it is to be alive in a fallen and broken world. We long to be whole again. We long to be happy again. Jesus, by the way, said, "Blessed are you who are poor in spirit." Those of you who are longing for wholeness and for happiness are fortunate, because that's where the journey can begin, when you're longing to be on that journey. I'm not a mess because I long for wholeness and happiness. I'm a mess because what I've done with that longing. This little rope that I have in front of me, and the ones that I hope that you are carrying as well, this little rope that I have in front of me is a timeline of my life. Somewhere in my journey, on this timeline of my life, I identified something among all of the beautiful gifts of God that I wanted to be happy and whole. At one point in my journey, that something that I wanted to be happy and whole was to be good at sports. I identified this one little place, and I wanted to be good at sports, and mostly wrestling in my particular case. And in some cases, I was fairly successful, in some cases not. But even when I was successful, I found that it still left me longing somehow. And when I wasn't, it made me longing even more. And so I pulled harder on that place. And, well, that's one of my places in my life. Along the timeline of my life, there came a time when I wanted to be liked. I noticed I felt more whole, at least for a little while, when people liked me or when people loved me. And so I found the things that I could do to make people like me. And it was helpful for a while, but after a while I found that longing was still there. In fact, if anything, it was just more, because I live in a world of billions of people who want to be liked. That's a lot of competition. And I pulled tighter, but it didn't work. There came a time in my life when there was a particular relationship that I found made me happy and gave me a sense of wholeness. She was so cute. And so there I was in the first grade, identifying this little relationship, and I discovered after a while she has a will of her own too, and things aren't always easy, and so I pulled tighter on that thing, and it still didn't work. There came a time in my timeline when I found that success feels really good, success at whatever it might be, even being a pastor. And so I found that that made me feel really good, and I got a sense of wholeness from that, but even when it was going well, it wasn't as fulfilling after a while as I thought it would be, and so I pulled tighter, and oh my gosh, the times when I wasn't successful were even worse. And then there were the possessions. I found that there were possessions that made me feel happy. The truth is, this has happened hundreds of times, and I would gather up these possessions, whatever they were, my new stereo or my new iPod or whatever it might be, and after a while, it didn't satisfy anymore. And to tell you the truth, I've just kept doing it, and I've just kept doing it, and I've just kept doing it over the course of my whole life. And folks, what I need to tell you is, I'm a mess. Really. I am a mess. And the word of Jesus to me and the word of Jesus to you is, those who would try to save this life by grasping it more firmly and trying harder will lose it. But those who lose their lives for my sake in the gospel are going to find them. Let's walk back to Caesarea Philippi for a moment. The disciples of Jesus, the crowds gathered together. They're listening to the word of Jesus. There's no sugarcoating here. Boy, this is no chocolate ice cream painted over napalm. These are the real words that are really needed. Jesus to the crowds and his disciples. Whoever would save their life will lose it. But whoever loses their life for my sake and the gospel is going to find it. As we're watching this crowd this morning, we probably watch some people who get up and they close their arms and angrily they begin to walk away from Jesus. They're saying as they walk off, they're mumbling to one another, "That's the last thing I need, one more burden to carry in my life. I've carried all these burdens all my life, and now I'm supposed to die too? I'm supposed to lose everything? No, no more burdens for me." Somebody else is walking off and shaking their head saying, I just don't understand. How could he expect this much out of me? But those who are walking off from Jesus are walking away because hearing, they didn't hear. Because listen again to what he said. Those who would save their life will lose it, but those who lose their lives for my sake and the gospel will find them. Jesus isn't adding another burden to their lives. Jesus is removing the burden that they're already carrying. He's not telling people that he wants them to walk about dead. He's telling people that he wants to lose their life. They need to lose their lives in order that they may become truly alive. And some of them got it. We know that some of them did. Matthew the tax collector got it. We know that because at the end of the story, Matthew the tax collector was still there. In spite of a number of failures between here and there, Matthew was still there. Can you imagine? Matthew the tax collector hearing the word of Jesus saying, "Yeah, I'm ready to lose that thing. Those years of extortion that I practiced, all of the deceit that I practiced over all those years in my efforts to be whole and happy, it never worked. There's nothing more liberating in the whole world than I don't have to be that guy any longer." And Simon the Zealot, he stayed and he continued to follow. We know because he's still part of the story. At the very end, following the resurrection, he's still there. Simon the Zealot, who is the part of the political party that marinated and stewed in their hatred of the Romans, he's saying to himself, "Yeah, hatred hasn't gotten me anywhere. It surely hasn't gotten me life. I'm ready to be rid of that old garbage and to get on with something else." Mary of Magdala is there. We know that. She's one of the people who didn't desert Jesus even at the time of the crucifixion, one of the women who was close while Jesus was being crucified. Why? 7 demons cast out. Can you imagine carrying that burden around with you? 7 demons in her life, and now she is free. Jesus is not saying these words because he wants to add a burden to our lives. He's adding these words because he wants us to be alive. We've spent our whole cotton-picking lives tying on to the things that we thought were going to make us happy and whole, and all they've gotten us is Well, tell you what, afterward, you can tell me if you think this illustration is helpful or if it is not. It is to men and women and children who are called to the act of hospitality that Jesus says these words. Why is it so important to hear these words of Jesus while we're thinking about hospitality? Well, have you ever tried to embrace anybody when you look like this? You see, over the course of my life, the truth is that my efforts to practice hospitality when I look like this are incredibly selfish. To tell you the truth, the things that I do to be hospitable, to look hospitable, are really that. I want people to notice how hospitable I look. And in doing them, I'm just tightening the knots a little bit further. Have you ever tried to practice hospitality when you look like this? You can't do it. It's all selfishness. But whoever loses their life for my sake and the gospel will really find it. You see, behind the words that Jesus is using in this text, this word for life, or it's also sometimes translated soul, is the same word. It's the Hebrew concept of nephesh. Nephesh isn't some slippery, shadowy soul that lives inside of you. In the Hebrew mind, in the Hebrew way of thinking, nephesh is your true self, who you really, really, really are. Not the tied up person who's been grabbing a hold of things through the course of your whole life. Nephesh is the person who you really are, the one who is created in the image of God. And folks, if you have died to that one that you used to be, you are free. And now, you can welcome people into your circle because you don't look like that anymore. Now, you look like this. Do you hear the grace of God behind the words of Jesus? Do you hear the powerful medicine that he is addressing in this text? Adding a little bit of religion to our lives is not going to make us free. It's just going to make us more burdened. What we need is death and resurrection. What we need is to be crucified with Christ and raised to new life. What we need is to be people whose lives are no longer centered in all of the things that we have tied our lives in knots up about. What we need is to be centered and grounded in love. Oh, the mess we make of our lives when we are not centered and grounded in the love of God. Here's another way of saying it. Oh, the mess of our lives we make when we are idolaters. But oh, how we become free when we are reliant and surrendered and complying with the power and the love and the grace of God. Tony Campolo spoke at our church in Phoenix a number of years ago. And Tony described, by the way, if you don't know Tony Campolo, he's an extraordinary leader in the evangelical church, an incredible human being, a man who has practiced extraordinary hospitality over the course of his life. Tony was speaking in our church on an evening in Phoenix, and he said, people often want to know what my prayer life is like. They often ask me what my prayer life is like, and he said, I want to tell you how I begin my days. He said, I begin my days when I wake up in bed, and I remember that I am called to surrender to the love of God in Jesus. So he said, I lay there for a minute, and I imagine the light of Christ beginning to wash up over my feet. I'm in total darkness, but the light of Christ begins to wash up over my feet. And as I lay in bed, I say, okay, Lord, my feet are surrendered to your love today. He said, as I lay in bed, I imagine the light of Christ coming up to my knees. He said, all right, Lord, my knees down to my feet are surrendered to you today. He said, as I lay there, I imagine the light of Christ coming up over my trunk. He said, all right, Lord, all my legs belong to you now. I'm surrendered to the love of God in Jesus. I think you can see where this goes. Slowly, he imagined the light of Christ lifting over him until all of him is surrendered to the love of God in Jesus. Folks, we don't need to be more religious in order to be the hospitable people God has called us to be. The mantra I'm going to refer to again and again and again and again is welcomed people. Welcome people. When we know that we are welcomed by God in Jesus, and we are surrendered to that welcome, We are free to welcome one another and to live out our hospitality in outrageous and beautiful and extraordinary ways. And we're going to listen to a beautiful song right now called Lay It Down. And as you're listening to this song, I want to invite you to just take the little rope that I hope that you have in your hands and think through about some of the things that you've gotten all tied up onto. And go ahead and tie them on your rope. And it might be that by the time you're done, your rope will look a lot like mine. I suspect that it will. And then, as you're tying this rope, during the singing of the song, if you would like to come up here and just lay your rope down at this cross or kneel at the altar and lay your rope down at the altar there, as a sign of your intent to be surrendered to the love of God in Jesus Christ, be rooted and grounded in love, crucified and raised to new life in Christ Jesus our Lord.